Is the era of super low mortgages over?
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace Podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. When bonds go down, the yield goes higher to make them more attractive to investors. That abstract principle could make your next home more expensive. The benchmark 10-year T-note is down amid signs the U.S. economy is gathering some strength that has pushed the yield up to 2.15%, and 30-year mortgage rates are quite close to 4%, the highest in a year. Guy Sakala is an analyst at Inside Mortgage Finance. Good morning.
Good morning.
What do you think? End of an era?
It sure looks like that. You can never tell. Economists have been predicting interest rates would rise for the last 3 years, and they've been wrong every year. We're starting to see a significant housing recovery. The overall economy looks positive. We knew that we weren't going to stay at 3.5% forever. It was just a matter of time until we started moving up.
Now, before we get too breathless about, wowee, 4% 30-year mortgages, I think we need some perspective, right? This is not the Carter administration or the early Reagan era.
No. You know, if we have to predict what would be a normal, in quotes, interest rate for mortgages, it would probably be around 5%. And historically, 5% would look fantastic. It just looks pretty mediocre after the past year or more.
And a lot of us have had what you might call deflationary thinking, that mortgages are only going to get cheaper, so many of us waited to buy the house. That logic is now in question, I think.
Yes, and what we're seeing is clearly part of the rebounding housing market is homeowners getting off the fence and trading up, first-time home buyers jumping into the market, and it's all because they see the same signs you do and say, gee, rates are going to be moving up now, and if I want to even catch them below 4% or at 4%, I need to move now.
Guy Sakala, publisher at Inside Mortgage Finance, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
An outfit called Risk Management Solutions has used a computer model to predict that last week's terrible tornado in Oklahoma could cost insurance companies $3.5 billion. Bloomberg News is reporting this does not include wrecked cars covered under auto policies. Marketplace's Chrissy Clark is in Oklahoma looking at some of the more human costs of the disaster, and she joins us from just outside the hardest hit areas. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what are you seeing now?
Well, it's a simultaneously heartbreaking and heartwarming scene. There is so much destruction. It looks like whole neighborhoods have just gotten thrown in a blender. Mattresses are impaled on the tops of trees. I met one family who had a son who was trapped in the collapsed Plaza Towers Elementary School. And this same family also lost their house. And yet there they were, coming over to a friend and neighbors of theirs who also lost everything to give her some gift cards from Target because they say they're taken care of and they want to help their community too. Here's a bit of what the mother, Elise Duby, said.
We don't need it all, so we're trying to reach out to other people that have been affected.
And Chrissy, what's been the situation with volunteers and donations? I mean, is there enough?
Well, right now, there appears to be more than enough. One Red Cross shelter I went to has a sign that says, "No more donations, please." And one of the women running food at the shelter kept trying to get me to eat some of it because she said they had too much and they didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, you saw that with Hurricane Sandy relief. The Red Cross just this week was talking about being unable to spend about a third of the $300 million it raised after that storm. So is it a good or bad thing to have this large response?
Well, of course, it's a good thing in the grand scheme of things. But what I've been noticing is that there's this sort of interesting and difficult mismatch, so to speak, in the markets of giving and the markets of need. Part of that is because there's only so much a family needs right now. Of course, down the road, they're going to need to replace everything. But for the time being, where do they put it? I spoke to one woman named Michelle who lost the home she was renting and everything in it, and she had this plea.
You know, when it first happened, everybody was rushing to donate and give stuff, but that stuff is slowing down now. And it's nice if people remember that it's going to be months and things down here are still really, really bad.
So that's something for all of us to keep in mind as we go forward.
Marketplace's Chrissy Clark in Oklahoma. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
The Colorado River brings water to 40 million people and 4 million acres of farmland, but scientists are warning that with record drought and an influx of residents to its catchment area, things are getting very tight. The seven states that rely on the Colorado are trying to turn that around by teaming up with the feds, tribal leaders, farmers, and environmentalists. Shannon Mullen reports.
2013 is on pace to be the driest year in a century along the Colorado River, and the two huge lakes that serve as its reservoirs are expected to drop below half full for the first time since 1968. Ann Castle is an assistant secretary with the U.S. Department of the Interior.
We really are seeing a different kind of hydrological period, and it's not going in the right direction.
Castle says groups of stakeholders will have to work together to prevent their main source of water and income from drying up within the next 50 years. The Colorado supports 15% of the nation's food supply and a multi-billion dollar recreation industry. Think whitewater rafting in the Grand Canyon. Molly Mugglestone is co-director of Protect the Flows.
We really feel that we can meet the water needs of the Southwest while protecting a healthy, flowing river and all of the jobs that depend on it.
The other challenge for all sides could be figuring out how to get along through the process. I'm Shannon Mullen for Marketplace.
And if a company recalls a product, it might be nice to know about it. The Guardian of Britain reports that some metal-studded leather belts sold by the British online retailer ASOS were radioactive. They set off radiation detectors when passing through U.S. customs. Cobalt-60, probably from using recycled metal. Radiation levels were very low, so the recall back in January was voluntary, proactive, the company said. Yet it's only now become known to the wider public. ASOS is now reportedly in a spat with its South Asian supplier. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.